All right. Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday. We're back. And thank you for joining Bitcoin Veteran Spaces number 254, where we talk about Bitcoin. My name is Bob Van Kirk. I'll be your host this morning. And I'm joined by a nice group of gentlemen, it looks like. Hopefully we can get some ladies up here. But a great group of guys. Thanks for joining us this morning. If you're listening, please do share the space. If you enjoy the content, want to get people plugged in. But let's take a look at the time chain before we get too far into it. Today is Friday, August 29th, and we are Bitcoin block height number 912,254, with the Bitcoin price sitting just above $109,000, which means sats are on sale. You can pick them up at the rate of 918 sats per US dollar. Couple of announcements, guys, before we get to say good morning to this fine panel. And again, if you'd like to come up, it is open mic day. Everything goes, anything goes, except for shitcoins. So hit that microphone. Love to have you up here. If you haven't spoken before, we'll be extra nice to you. But a couple of announcements. Bitcoin Veterans is having their second annual summit on November 10th and 11th in beautiful Nashville, Tennessee. Day one is going to be a conference. Come and learn. Hang out with smart people in the space on a variety of topics. Day two will be range day, so you'll get the opportunity to fire some firearms safely with your friends. And we're looking for people who want to get involved. So visit bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025. Get plugged in. Get involved. If you want to propose a speaker topic, a panel topic, volunteer, or just attend, again, bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025. All right, guys, one more announcement. Sadly, we won't be hosting the space on Monday. I know I always say we do this every weekday, 10 a.m. Eastern, but we're giving everybody a break, mainly Texas Toast. I would do it, but he has said under no circumstances is he working on Labor Day. So with that,
it's Labor Day. I'm basically a communist. So if you work on Labor Day, you're not a true American.
Yes, sir.
It's the one day you get.
Good morning to you, sir. How are you this morning?
Doing all right. Sold a bunch of shit coins, being iron. So that felt good. And, yeah, I'm going to stack some more sats.
Beautiful. Neil, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good, Bob. Speaking tonight down at the Alamo Lab, so I'm pretty pumped up for that.
Nice. Yeah, that's great. Good Friday night for you. Captain Trips, good morning, sir. Welcome back. No crickets this morning, but
God,
I would play
damn it
for him. Yeah, I know. Pubby, how are you, sir?
Doing all right. Doing okay. The future looks bright. That's why we gotta wear shades, my friend. Let's keep stacking. Keep stacking. We're doing good.
Yes, sir. Shane, thanks for hopping on this morning. I know you're a busy guy. How are you?
Morning, Bob. Morning, everybody. Good to hear everybody, see everybody. Yeah, I've been traveling a ton, just getting at it in the mining industry out here. So, yeah, good to be back. I'm with Texas Toast. I'm going to soak up as much free cuck bucks on Monday as possible. Just enjoy the socialism a little bit and then get back at it.
Very good. Coleman, thanks for coming up. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, good morning, everybody. It's a pleasure to be up here. I am doing well. No complaints on my end. Three more days till season opener.
There you go. And last but not least, BFP, how are you this morning? You got any birds for us in the background or no?
It's overcast. I can see birds, but they're not making any noise. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yes, spies everywhere, the birds. Just kidding. All right. Well, let's hop into it. Wondering if you guys have, this is open mic day, so wondering if you guys have anything in particular on your mind. We can kind of take the conversation wherever you want, just hoping to have a little bit of fun. And yeah, let's see. I did see some interesting things happening, with a thousand developers lost their secrets to an AI powered, thief, and interesting things on the AI front. I think there's good and bad there. I know, Mining Goblin wants to talk about, vibe coding. I don't see him with us yet this morning, but, I'm interested to see if we can carry on a conversation about AI and Bitcoin, or if you guys want to take it somewhere else. Does anybody have anything they've been working on, vibe coding? How have you guys been interfacing with AI?
So for me, it's not like I don't interface with AI, aside from asking Grok stupid questions and getting stupid answers. But I do think it's a threat. And I had this conversation last night with a municipal bond salesman. He gets a fee off of shilling municipal bonds and repackaging them and doing all this. And it just got me thinking, you know, I brought up Bitcoin and started talking about it, and it is AI and Bitcoin. I think a large reason these financial advisors don't want to look at Bitcoin in a serious way is because it's a threat to their model. Specifically, it's a threat to their job specifically. Why, you know, pay a 3% fee or do any of this crap? And I asked him what his returns were, and he was like, oh, it's like 4%. It's like, oh, I would feel like shit, you know, if I was in charge of somebody else's money and was losing them real purchasing power. That's where it's like, I don't get it. But I think AI and Bitcoin, especially combined, you know, a lot of these areas, these finance capitals, finance bros, that are really just scraping fees are going to be gone within, 10 years, especially if they don't start putting Bitcoin in their clients' portfolios or kind of trying to get creative and integrating it into whatever systems they do. So, still early. I love having these conversations because I just feel like they don't get it, and, makes me feel early.
Yeah, it's interesting. BFP, you have your hand up. Go ahead, sir.
I used to be a financial advisor for a short period of time, and it's comical to me because it's all about AUMs. And now all you have to do is self-custody Bitcoin, and you remove so much risk. You're blowing the doors off of any financial advisor who's stuck in TradFire legacy system. And it's like the unraveling of it's like the Roman Empire falling, but nobody saw it for like 500 years. So I hope it doesn't take 500 years, and I doubt it will, but the monetary systems are shifting right beneath everyone's feet and financial advisors.
Now this is the Roman Empire rising. You have it back.
Well, yeah, exactly. There you go. I like your framing better. But they're paid not to see what we're talking about. And that's through AUMs, assets under management. So they're never going to see it as long as they keep paying them not to see it.
I completely agree. Hey, Rico, thanks for coming up. How are you today?
Good morning. Thank you. Excellent. It's a good topic, to talk about, because I think a lot of people are looking at their jobs and wondering how much longer they're going to have that comfortable job if it's just like, you know, signing off some notary or giving somebody advice. AI jobs are literally displacing white collar jobs as we see it. Like blue collar jobs have all been exported to China or somewhere else that's cheaper for labor. And, you know, and then you got white service jobs where you have a lot of people with diplomas and different degrees that they're quote unquote specialists at. And, you know, even the health and medical field is going to get hit hard. And so, the idea is life's supposed to get easier, but if we're, you know, managing systems that are relatively don't need to be managed and will be autonominated, what are you going to do with your life? And so I think it comes to self-responsibility, and you see a lot of vibe, quote unquote, vibe coding and people who are trying to leverage this. And then there's people who don't want to look at this because they see the time is ticking. It's almost up. The Overton window is closing for their comfortable lifestyle. So I just think it's a good time to apply your skills or learn new skills while we're in the big transition.
Yeah, good
stuff. It's just thinking about, for me, it's just thinking about what are humans meant to do? And trying to, cause I'm doing this with my own mother. It's like, she's a bookkeeper at a business. And, you know, I told her, I was like, I can get it done with software for 20% of the cost that we're paying you to do this the old school way, just crunching numbers. It's like, you know, so you're not meant to, you're doing a job that is not meant to be done by humans anymore. And it's a harsh reality, but it's like, you know, you can find purpose in doing things that humans are really meant to do. We're not meant to just sit and crunch numbers all day. That's like a total machine experience. So I'm just for like embracing the human side of stuff, getting more creative, artistic, finding stuff you're really passionate about, interacting with other people. You know, that's what it is to be human. So, but yeah, AI is kind of waking everybody up and Bitcoin at the same time. So it's like a dual prong.
Yeah, I keep thinking, bring on, you know, with all these negative stories that come out, there's AI has still yet to really go through the true FUD period like Bitcoin has. So that'll be interesting to see.
You guys remember the little photo box things that would be in the parking lot at like the shopping center? You would pull up and you would drop off your film and then you'd come back, I don't know, a couple of days later or whatever and pick up your photos.
Yeah, it's called a photo mark.
They had that at the supermarket too. And reason is because, you know, believe it or not, kids, like there was no like, you know, phone with a camera, digital camera built in, like in your pocket. And you had to actually use cameras that exposed film with a shutter to light. And then you had to have people develop that film. It like, this is just hitting me. Like all this stuff y'all are talking about is the same kind of changes, and people just don't want to believe that the way we do things is going to change. But I mean, if, especially for the older generation, they should remember so many instances of this. Do you guys remember newspapers? I know they're not totally gone, but do you remember? I remember I had a brief period of time. I had a paperboy job when I was young, and I had to actually like hop in the back of the car and mom would drive around and I would, you know, first fold up all the newspapers and then I would like toss them out the back of the car on people's driveways. Do you guys realize how much the world has changed just in our lifetimes? Like it is bonkers. And like people, and I think it's just a fear response. It's just this thing because change means uncertainty. Change means, you know, things are gonna really be different and that terrifies people and they cling on to their current view of things and are defiant and in denial about coming change because it's scary. And that's just, I think, a natural human thing. But my God, it's like so strong these days and it's changing so fast.
It is. And you're right. I mean, it is good to kind of zoom out and think about those things just in our short lifetimes. You know, I know everybody has different, there's a lot of different generations in this space and that's awesome. But I think we can all see a lot of those things that have changed. I think Pubby had his hand up next. We'll go to him and then
I totally cut him off. I totally interrupted.
Yeah. Hey, that's Pubby. All right.
Let's go to TC. Then,
Shane after that. So go ahead, Pubby.
Oh man. Yeah. It's looking back. There's a quote from Gandhi in there and he's looking at the machinery coming from Britain. And he says, unfortunately, what we need here in India isn't mass production. We need production by the masses. And he had a point, like, what the fuck? We got all these people that were farmers. Now we can't use this stuff because it puts everyone out of work. And this is back just to get us to the AI, question, regarding anyone that's pushing, you know, these bonds. Well, I can get you 3.4%, 4%. And they don't see AI coming for them. And it started, you know, now mind you, this is well before, when you had to pick individual stocks, but then they got into mutual funds. Now they have life cycle funds where you just fire and forget automatically, shifts your exposure between stocks and bonds. And I'm sitting here, what am I going to do? If I go sit down with someone and I'll say, okay, what can you do for me? What kind of returns do you get?
And they can tell me it's some great number, 20%, 30%. And I said, well, look, man, I've done nothing. I bought Bitcoin and for 5 years, I'm up 859%. I don't know what the fuck else you guys are going to do for me. And this is the nature of AI. You'll be able to optimize. I mean, if you don't want full exposure to Bitcoin, but AI can go through things faster than anyone else and optimize what your returns will be. And this is just scared the hell out of everyone. And it's just like lawyers. Something happens to me, man. I get arrested. You think I'm taking a court appointed attorney? Fuck no. Is it, you know what? I'll grok that shit out because I know it's going to be better than anything else I get. So I'll land the plane there. AI is coming. And, you know, so up to us individually on how we apply it to our lives.
Well, and the main argument these guys have is, you know, you get to talking about this and like, it is the safety aspect of these bonds. It's like, it's safe. It's a risk profile. It's all, you know, they start getting into their head with all this stuff, which these things do exist, but their paradigm is so off where that's the part that they don't realize, you know, and they're starting to understand the volatility is good, kind of thing, but, the safety aspect and that really Bitcoin is one of the least risky things you can own. Once that they cross that mental chasm, I think things can start to change, but until you start to realize, until you realize that, you know, Bitcoin is actually a safe bet, in the long run,
they're not safe and effective. It, so.
We could go there too, but Shane, go ahead, sir.
It's funny, TC brought up the change. I know some of us are a little older, got some, you know, wiser years and gray hairs and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, looking at this, I was thinking about it the other day. The one constant thing in our lives and in this world is change. And it's weird that we haven't built a culture to embrace it. And then instead of fighting it, try to flow with it. It's one of those things. I kind of channel my inner hippie when I hear about, you know, these things and, you know, people fighting, you know, the progression of technology and time. But it's also really awesome to watch, especially in this community, is, you know, really the forebearers of some of the greatest technology that man has ever had to see what they're doing with it and what they're building. There's so many in this space that crave a life and are building lives that are outside of cities that are very much in line with what I think our grandparents and great grandparents did, at the turn of the 1900s, right? They were putting together farms. They were raising, you know, livestock of sorts. They were homeschooling their children. They were, you know, extremely proficient with firearms and defense. It was a much simpler, easier, slower time. I don't know, you know, how, you know, the rest of the world goes there, but as I see and watch Bitcoiners continue to, you know, pioneer this space and really, you know, push, you know, the envelope, I see more and more that we're just adding technology to old ways and the, you know, the mass effect of communication and the network effect to be able to share those old ways with each other while preserving the value of our, you know, our lives, and what we've, you know, just, you know, strive to earn and then capture in Bitcoin is, I don't know. For me, it's not scary. It's one of those things where I see it and I just go, wow. Yeah. You know what? Being from the 1900s, you know, we were cavemen and we, you know, we were barely scratching the surface of technology. But now that so much is coming out and so much is leaking from, you know, government sources and things like that. And there's people pushing the idea of, you know, I would say infinite energy, but, you know, machines that can pull energy out of ether, magnetics, you know, in terms of, you know, propulsion and everything else that's happening. This is one of those spaces that I marvel at. And it's not that I wish away the years and days, but I'm excited to see what Bitcoiners, especially the Bitcoin veteran space, is going to do in terms of helping people live the lives that they've always dreamed about. And then some that they can't even fathom like this. That's exciting to me. And I think AI is definitely part of that. You know, there's going to be so much that comes from our ability to transact with open AI, you know, the AI that's actually not going to censor, the AI that's not going to you know, throttle or be coated. Like those are, they're going to get left in the dust. And there's a great series, out there. I'm trying to think of, Guy Swan did it. And he talks about how the most open AI, the most utilitarian AI is going to win out because at the end of the day, people don't want suppressed artificial intelligence. They want, you know, anything and everything that they can get their hands on. And I think that's, you know, that's just kind of the modality of truth. Truth wants to be free. Information wants to be free. And, you know, this is the space that's doing it.
We do need based AI for sure. Want to get to some more hands and really great comments. Shane, Neil, I think you were next. Go ahead.
Yeah. The AI stuff's interesting. And what I'm always, I'm anchoring my thoughts on AI is, okay, well, what is it not? And, you know, we can call it intelligence and we can have lots of different definitions for what that even means. But I mean, AI is not rational. Like, it's not pulling anything out of the world that it's not abstracting principles that we didn't already put there. Like, we are the one, like, we're the rational creature that collates and abstracts principles from reality. And we put that into the AI and then we can use it extremely powerfully. But like, you know, so what does that mean for me? It's like, okay, well, make sure, you know, that whatever value you're going to create, make sure you're leveraging that, you know, your rationality. Make sure you're actually abstracting principles and using those principles. And then like that makes you immune to like losing your, like AI is not a threat to you if that's the value you're creating. You know, the people that AI is going to destroy are all the stupid middlemen, bureaucratic administrators that aren't actually doing anything. Like the admin person, they didn't create the form. They didn't create the protocol. They didn't, you know, come up with anything. They're just literally executing, you know, an ordered syntax, and charging you fees for it. So it's just like, you know, those people are going to get wrecked because they're not needed. Like the AI will do that. You know, we train the AI, we tell it what to do. We make the connections for it and it just executes faster than we can even like comprehend. And that seems like spooky and magical, but it's like that the people make AI like powerful. We're the ones that actually feed it the power. So it's like, I don't know. I'm excited by AI because I understand like what it does, what it can be, how it can be leveraged, but I'm not scared by it because it's just a tool at the end of the day that a human has to use. And, on a side note about the financial advisors, like that's actually what really got me started down, you know, this path of even like, what is money? Cause I asked my stupid little broker guy, like some basic questions and he provided retarded answers. And I was like, oh shit, I have to take, I can't outsource this anymore. Like he's retarded. He's not describing or explaining, you know, the reality that I see before my eyes. So I gotta level up and take that responsibility. So I actually owe him a great, I'm indebted to him, eternally grateful for being so retarded that it activated me and got me actually caring about the important stuff in life. But thanks.
Yeah, it's really good stuff. And there's a lot of threads I could pull on from that. One of them, I do want to get to Rico, but one of them I wanted to bring up is related to the economy and, you know, what you brought up, Neil, was this threat to jobs in a variety of spaces. And one thing I picked out of the Jackson Hole meeting last week, when, you know, all markets rose, based on Powell's comments is this, you know, we've a lot of in Bitcoin spaces, we've been talking about this a long time that the Fed is going to come off their 2% inflation target rate. And I think based on, the comments last week and their worry about employment, they are already coming off that number. And so I think we know what that all means, right? There's higher prices, assets will continue to be buoyed. Things like Bitcoin will continue to go up, which we all know, but I think, you know, we're really starting to see it, in real time. And, it's interesting how AI plays a role in some of this. And with that, we'll go to Rico.
Oh, I love this comment. This conversation is great. It's more productive than a lot of comments, conversations I've been hearing in spaces. I do want to say that, like, this is, like, going back to TC, what he's talking about, like, there was a time when we had, like, VHS and people didn't have cell phones and we didn't have the internet. So And then the unlocking of the internet unlocks all of this information. So I guess like what I'm trying to get to is that over the time, the only thing we really have on this earth is the time and the decisions you make every day. And I know people are asking these big, big questions about like what I'm going to do, and they're scared and the change. It's like you have to slowly adapt. You don't have to, you know, quit your job or all of a sudden spend all your hours like trying to figure out what to do with AI. It's because I'm dealing with this right now. I'm on a sabbatical year, so I have to figure out what I'm doing for a year to prepare myself for the next decade, two decades, three decades. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is this is proof of work. Like for me, it's about going back to the drawing board. I'm clearing these ideas and just looking at what am I good at and what can I bring to the market. And I work more in the social, like I'm a teacher. So I live at a farm. So I'm really good at connecting people. But I don't necessarily use AI for, any kind of vibe coding. I just use it to search in questions. It's like a super search engine. And so I would just say that for a lot of people, you're going to see people scared of the change and you just have to adapt. I mean, think about how much the world has changed and how much you are you happy with the decisions you made that brought you to this point in the advancement of technology? Or did you, in a sense, look back and say, I could have done a little bit more. I could have applied myself more. So I guess I would just say is a good time to go back to the drawing board if you're asking yourself those questions and say, what am I good at? What can I produce or services that I can offer? And then maybe also going to your like physical being and saying, am I good with myself? Am I stable psychologically? Am I physically prepared for the changes if there's going to be, you know, a shortage of food or whatever? I'm just saying that there's a big change happening and it's all we have is proof of work. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I love that. Hey, Wade, thanks for coming up. What's on your mind?
Morning, Bob. Just in the context of talking about, you know, where we are with the, you know, AI revolution, I'm not really that 100%. You know, convinced about the efficacy or efficiency of the AI models and whatnot right now. But one of the major concerns I have is the production and energy and capacity bottlenecks, which we're going to have. If we're going to make all of these investments, it's going to require significant amounts of uranium, rare earth materials, and labor that we simply do not have right now. I mean, the Navy is paying welders $150 an hour to put their submarines together right now. So if we try to 2x or 10x, you know, our energy consumption, how are we going to build these nuclear facilities? How are we going to build these natural gas plants to get any and all of this material off the ground? There's serious bottlenecks. There's serious labor shortages all the way around. And these types of investments are going to require materials from abroad. And I don't know how we're going to get there without a significant inflationary event to make the acquisitions required for these investments.
Well, that's exactly the point. And it kind of goes along with, in the spirit of Labor Day, you know, $150 an hour, that's probably actually the good wage and the average wage for that kind of work. And maybe it's even higher. And so people are starting to realize that they don't want to get paid this shit dollar for shit work. And so, you know, they're going to have to print a bunch of money to get the things they want. And they're going to pay people, you know, what is good, the living wage at the time. The problem is that 6 months later, you hit that inflation spike and then your, you know, goods are twice as expensive again.
But my concern. My concern is that doesn't get us, you could raise the wage to $1,000 an hour and that doesn't get you any more qualified welders quick enough. This is the exact same thing that Rheinmetall ran into with their artillery shell production. They ended up raising the rate for what an artillery shell costs from $800 a shell to $8,000 a shell. And they're not increasing their production capacity.
Yeah.
Right. There's definitely a lag and it requires even more, you know, you have to build the infrastructure to get this kind of like qualified worker available too. So then that's more money that needs to go into these training facilities and everything else, trade schools, all this kind of stuff to get things built in this country again. So, I would expect to see a large influx if they're serious about doing this. And I think just the market is, I think Americans are serious about doing this kind of work and bringing production back to this country. And you know, that's going to require the money printer.
Yeah. I'm just saying that it's likely, it looks like a five, if we're going to do it and we're going to try and do it right, it's going to be a 5 or 10 year inflationary cycle of reshoring labor and production capacity. This isn't something you do in a year or two.
Yeah, this is the signal to the market, right? If we're paying these guys, you know, $150 or $1,000 in, you know, an hour to be welders on, you know, whatever, or electricians, because we just don't have the supply of these blue collar workers that we need. This is the signal to the market that we need more blue collar workers. And if that's, you know, what entices them to become a electrician or a welder or whatever, you know, blue collar job that's out there, then that's definitely what we need. And that's coming. You know, Mike Rowe talks about this extensively, and I think he's absolutely on the money. You know, the amount of blue collar workers that we need, there are things that are not going to be going away with AI. And there's, you know, tons and tons and tons of, you know, great jobs out there. And there's developing, you know, I would say, let's just put it this way. I happen to see the, you know, the requests for proposals and for quotes and things like that in the energy space. And the plans that the U.S. government has to support exactly what we're talking about is there is a ton of money that they are going to print out of the thin air, and they are going to throw at energy creation, and everything that we need to get that done. So it's already started. It's, if you're out there and you're looking for work, this is a great opportunity, especially if you need the skills or are, you know, kind of already in those markets. Like, these are trade jobs that are available, and that are going to be extremely, you know, coveted and highly valuable for anybody that can pull this off and start to switch their mindset from white collar to blue collar.
Yeah. And I do think that it also pertains to some of us that have kids, right? Like, you got to be evaluating the post-secondary education and the value of that with, just learning how to prompt and get good information and understanding, how to think about these things, I think is going to be huge. And it's hard. Like, there's a transition period, and I think people are going to have, some people are going to succeed, and some people are going to make the mistake of paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for an education that really is completely unnecessary. And hopefully they're not going into massive amounts of debt to do it.
Hey, I saw Pubby's hand, and so I was going to jump in and interrupt. But this time I'm going to defer. Go ahead, Pubby.
Oh, man. Nah, this is great stuff. You know, one of the questions that we sometimes need to ask and forget to ask is, all right, so what? So then what? So what is the use of this automation we've had over the years? What is the use of this AI? As someone brought up earlier, what about this time then you have on your hands? And I can tell you, just being in Bitcoin, before you know it and you stack long enough, it's like, oh, God damn it. My retirement sort of plan I thought was going to be 15 years away is now 12 years ahead of schedule. And so what? And you've got these, you know, think tanks that have seen this coming down the road for years. I mean, by years, I mean decades, the 60s. And they knew basically what they assumed was citizens, that their idle hands will be work of the devil. And you flood the workforce. You double the tax base and you flood the workforce with women. But they realize, oh, God damn it, our population is going to be out of control. And this is what you're going to find. We're going to have a bunch of useless eaters. And that's what many are. And this is what many can be. You say, okay, we're going to take care of all your needs. What are you going to do all day? And they'll say, well, God damn it, I'm a gamer. And people got to ask themselves the personal question. Some are religious. Some will say, you know what? I'm going to get more spiritual. I want to spend more time with family. Others, yeah, they're going to exist to do things that may seem mindless. So everyone, I would just encourage in and of yourself, say, all right, this stuff is coming down. Automation kicked a lot of blue collar jobs down the road. AI, there's going to be a lot of surprises to law firms, to doctors who thought they had this job. And this is a serious thing. That's great that you freed all this stuff and you created this beautiful thing. But what does that actually mean then? And then what? And so what? So now, damn, you know, you're 45 and you're thinking, I got half a life to go. All my basic needs are met. Who am I? What? Those are some serious damn questions. I go through that honestly on a daily basis. Who am I? What am I going to do that's valuable to myself, my family, my community? And those are sort of tough things. So I think it's great that you open up a rabbit hole with what AI is going to do and change, but then you got to ask yourself, and then what?
Goddamn meaning of life. God, do something. For real though, it's a heavy duty thing. And a lot of people maybe set themselves on a path at a very young age. You know, certainly I'd say the education system is set up this way to kind of put people on a certain trajectory from a pretty young age when, I don't know, my life experience tells me whatever the hell I thought in my early 20s is nothing like what I thought in my 30s and is nothing like what I think today. And so you have to actually maybe develop some dynamicism. And I think maybe that's where the AI thing comes into play for a whole bunch of people, is like you can, through this technology, educate yourself in an entirely new way. You can pick a new specialty, a new focus, a new skill set. Hey, Neil, your mic is live. Skill set, you can basically onboard yourself to that in a faster time frame and in a more productive context than ever before, because now instead of having to go pursue an educational path to learn something, then go into, you know, maybe the job market and hopefully find a job and then maybe find an apprenticeship and so on, and so, and years go by before you're kind of like on your feet. I see many cases out there where people are in just literal, like, I mean, look, Jack put out that BitChat app that he literally coded up in a weekend. You get an idea and the AI not only allows you maybe to figure out how you would go about doing that, but actually execute on doing it. And so it's one of these things. That's kind of what the vibe coding terminology really means, is like there's a path to actually manifesting ideas, in that is real, that we just never had before. So I would say, just even looking at, like, you know, technology a decade ago versus today, there are massive opportunities, and there's kind of a divide out there right now between those that embrace this AI technology and recognize it as the accelerant that it is. And there's the people that are kind of maybe standing on the sideline and just waiting and, you know, maybe are fearful or maybe are hesitant or maybe assume it's not for them. I think it's one of these things. It's kind of like, if you go back 10 or 15 years and you said, look at this search engine technology that Google came out with. That's interesting, but that's just for internet nerds. I don't really need that. And then look at what's happened in all industries in regards to marketing and presence on the web and how that turns into kind of a ubiquitous facet of things. So I see it that way. It's just, here comes these next set of powerful tools. Whatever you do, it will accelerate, and it offers you a really, it's like a magic trick. You can basically shortcut a lot of the time that it would have taken to educate yourself on a certain subject matter, strategize about how to move forward or do something, and then actually execute on it. And there's literally people doing all of that in a weekend and manifesting something that didn't exist before. It's incredibly powerful.
Yeah, I think you're going to see an explosion, and we already are, an explosion of software, right? Because a lot of people have a lot of great ideas, but in order to innovate, you have to have capital, you have to have time, you have to have all these things. And vibe coding really allows normal people who don't know how to code anything to create. And I think this speed up of, you know, failing fast is going to lead to lots of innovations. But I think one thing we haven't really touched on is some of the negatives. Rico, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted, I what TC is talking about makes me think of like a creative renaissance. And I think a lot of people are so worried that they're not going to be successful. So I've been dealing with like having everything kind of organized. I like things organized and clean, and that's just how I am, but it's going to get messy. There's going to be anarchy. It doesn't have to succeed. You know, you might get shut off of Google Play Store because, you know, maybe they don't like you, but that's kind of like this switch over. So you don't have to have all the answers, right? I think that a lot of people around you are doing the same thing. They're all lost in translation. And so it's a good time to be fucking lost, right? It's okay to be a mess.
I got something, Bob, for the dark side, which is, basically, you know, the AI has like very seamlessly replaced search in so many contexts. I mean, quite literally, you go to Google and the top results now are the AI generated results, not even the ones that people are paying to advertise, right? And most people don't even pay really attention to that. I was bitching and moaning a decade ago about why don't people like pay more attention to the sponsored search results versus the organic ones below them. You know, now it's like you got AI ones elbowing out the sponsored results. So people don't realize it, but this technology has been integrated like everywhere. So now you're kind of deferring your source of truth or your expertise to individual models all over the place. We see it all over X. People are just constantly asking Grok to like, is this true? And there's a real dangerous, casual attitude and naive attitude about what are these AIs actually? And the reality check for most normies about how frequently they're just outright wrong. How frequently they just are not providing you with facts. And it's one of the biggest flaws is that they will always give you an answer. Have you ever seen an AI say, gee, I don't know, or I'm not sure? Like they don't do that. So just check yourself, because a real human being would run into situations like that and say, wait, gee, I'm not really sure. I need to look into that more. Or that's a complex topic. There's not a real simple answer right now. Dude, these things don't do that. What they do is they search their little models and they come up with what they assess to be the best answer to give back. And that's not necessarily always based on what's the most truthful or accurate. So I think we're going into a world here rapidly where a ton of people are even more misinformed, despite the fact they have all this, you know, insane world of information at their fingertips.
Yeah. I mean, when we stopped teaching people how to think critically, that I think is where what you're saying is true, where people will come in and basically they're seeking truth from an AI, and that's problematic. Pubby, see your hand again. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a few writers out there. There's a French guy, Jacques Ellul, who wrote a book called The Technological Society. Another one I would recommend is Neil Postman. And at his crux, they extol the value of technological change and what we're getting is they're the ones that actually ask the question, what is being taken away? What is taken away? Because everything that gives, something is taken away. And one of the stories they tell was this old king, and of course it's sort of a parable, that had a bunch of wise men in his thing, and, you know, they're in a time of peace, and he says, I'm going to have a competition on, you know, who can come up with the best invention, and I'll give everyone a month to do this. Well, they came back, a bunch of cool things, but the one that was the most intriguing was this guy that invented this thing, and he called it writing. And he says, you know, king, everything that you say, everything that you, all of your laws, we can now write down, and it's permanent. Everyone can see it. Okay? Anywhere you go, you can see this. And he had thought about it for a moment and said, I see the value. I see this value in what you're saying. However, when it's down on this paper, it's not lost from our minds. Right now, everyone has my laws written on their heart and memorized. And this is what you're seeing when it comes to AI. They just had a thing where they're measuring the AI searches. And as soon as school stopped, it dropped to near zero for the summer months. And they're actually just, what they're doing is the kids now just trust AI. Yeah, fuck it. You know what? AI, what's this? You get people that are driving, like literally they'll follow their GPS and drive into a body of water because the GPS says this is the road. There's no, like you're talking about the critical thinking that's going, but the mind changes. And that was always the human experience. You're losing the human experience of you make a decision on the facts as you've learned them. You find out that, you know what? My decision was wrong because I didn't listen to this person. I didn't research this. And that is a human experience. And that's why you look at people that are, we consider wise or elders. You look at them because they've been through it. They started out young. They made a stupid mistake. They learned from it. And that's the thing that gets taken away here. That's the dark side of all this technology is what are we losing as humans?
Yeah, really good stuff. And it reminds me, driving into a lake, it reminds me of people who get hit by cars as they're just looking, staring at their phone and trying to cross the street. It's crazy to me. Neil, I see your hand. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, hey, Grok, what's in my pocket? You know, like, I don't, it's like, you really don't have to get too confounded, like, by this mystic magic thing. Like, if you're focused and you're directing your, you know, human potential, your energy at the real world, looking outside, looking at problems, like, that's what you feed the AI. You go find out what's in the box. You feed that to the AI and then you use that. Like, that's how you leverage it. To help you become a more powerful human agent. So,
Hobbit good question. Stuff. No, I appreciate it. And this has been fun, guys. Wanted to say good morning to Petro. We do have to have him come back up.
Bueno dias.
Dedicate a show to the project he's been working on. I'm curious to hear an update, but. Don't have a ton of time left in the show. So thanks for coming up and would love to hear your contributions to the topic, sir.
But I got a hold of a world renowned, he's a guy that studies the ethics. He's an ethicist for psychology, for ethical like applications of psychological treatments. The way I ran into this guy is because the first person that I was, I don't know if you guys know, Noah Kahn, I think that's his name. He's one of the Bitcoin doctors. Like he's been around, the space he's a really cool guy. Anyways, we got to chatting about the project and he put me in contact with a friend of his that has been doing work with, TMS, transmagnetic stimulation. And so that's a kind of a dicey topic in the world of clinical applications. And so the fact that I'm working with two guys that are already working at the bleeding edge of what's ethically correct and that they are world experts gives me a lot of hope for them putting me in the right like path to get this thing done correctly. So for those of you that do not know, I'm working on an AI standalone system that would be basically air-gapped from the internet that would allow for therapy of veterans at home without having to have access to the VA because the VA sucks. I know I work there. So that's a short run of what's going on.
Yeah, I think the first question or the first prompt to the AI is, please tell me what I want to hear. No, I'm just kidding. But I do think that that's a problem for some people. And in your application in particular, I think I'm sure you can set the parameters so that the AI is actually asking valuable questions. One thing that I've learned, and maybe just, you know, as we kind of head towards the end of the show, I wonder if people up here on stage or maybe someone in the audience that wants to come up has learned how to prompt better. So I think we've kind of touched on it here during the show that search engines are kind of dead or, you know, if you do use Google, you're getting the AI anyway. But a lot of people just simply use the AIs that are out there to ask questions or to use it as a search engine because that's what people have been used to doing for 20 plus years, 25 years. And so I wonder if anybody has any tools or suggestions. I could come up with a couple on how to prompt better so that you could get better results from the AI. Does anybody want to chime in on that?
Yeah, but I think Rico wants something to say because he's been slamming his
head. No. I'd rather hear the response. It's nothing. I'm just going to rebuttal the same thing on the podcast.
Okay. So a quick response on that is prompt engineering is dead. Context engineering is the new thing. So what do I mean by that? Prompt engineering has to do with the way that you tell the LLM more information about what you want so that it has more stickiness as to what you're trying to get out of it. So it needs mental guardrails. Like that's really the best way to put it. Because if you don't, what basically an LLM is doing is it has the corpus of knowledge of all of the probabilistic words that are in that vector database. When I say a vector database, this is really important to try to understand. It's arrows in some space in the computer, right? Like, so imagine a bunch of arrows in a big knotted mess. But the arrows, the distance and the length and the direction of the arrows has to do with the meaning of the word. And so you would imagine that the word German Shepherd and Australian Shepherd, those ideas would have very, very similar vectors because A, they share the word shepherd, and B, they share the idea of dog. So that's a quick explanation as to what you're traversing when you're asking an LLM for something. You're basically asking it to give you the next right arrow in that series of arrows of responses. It really doesn't think about it like words. And so what you want to do is you want to give it like primed information that leads it to the right responses before you ask the question. So one thing you can do is tell it behave like an expert or behave like a group of experts. A very interesting thing to also do is, give me the critique of such and such, especially if they're a podcaster or a well-written person. The more material that they have written, the more that you're going to get that person's voice. So you can imagine that a Lynn Alden is very prolific in her writing. And so the LLMs have Lynn pretty freaking nailed down. So you can ask for Lynn to critique your essay, right? Or you can ask for, Lynn to say, for example, have an argument with, I don't know, Saifedean Ammous about a particular topic. And then you get very interesting responses. So those are ways that you can begin to think about what's happening. Now, caveat to all this is with the advent of thinking models, you're going to get a shit ton of noise if you prompt engineer. And if you don't know how you prompt engineer, because they behave completely different than non-thinking models. And so you have to be very, very careful about what you're asking to what thing. And so it's a tough question when you actually get technically down into it, because every LLM has its own thing it's good at, and its own thing it's good at makes the responses completely different.
Yeah, good stuff. And one thing I train people on actually, especially banks, is a lot of what you said, which is first you got to give it context, then you got to tell it its role. So, you know, it could be one person or you can call it an expert in a certain area. And then what I like to really do is ask it to interview me. So interview me and give me 5 questions one at a time so that you can gain more perspective, more context on what I'm actually trying to get out of asking you. And then I give it a task. And so I say, here's what I really want. And then because it's not descriptive enough in just that initial prompt of context, role, interview, and task, it'll actually come back to me and ask me single questions at a time, up to 5. And it will build off of each answer. And then eventually it gives me a full length thing and will make suggestions based on its response. And so I'd encourage
you. What you're talking about is agentic workflow, which is an important different thing, right? Like you're breaking down the things that you're doing into steps. Then you get a response from that step and you feed it to the next step. And so again, these are things that you have to you have to almost break it down into like a coach's, like, you know, dry board, and you're doing like the X's and O's and stuff, and you're like, okay, this is going to go this way, and then it's going to go spit out and go that way. And really, it sounds funny, but like, if you don't do this, you get garbage. You get absolute garbage. Like, it just hallucinates and starts giving you nonsense. So very important thing is you have deterministic and non-deterministic tasks. And the more you go towards a defined, let's say, for example, 5-step deterministic plan, you're going to get a lot better results than if you go non-deterministic. You know, although there are times when you want a non-deterministic LLM doing things. And this is one thing I'm going to kind of leave you guys with is you have to start thinking about an LLM like a CPU and like maybe even a gateway and maybe even like a router. And you have to start thinking about virtual machines. And the LLM is like the CPU of the virtual machine. And then the vector database is like the hard drive, memory space. And then you actually have a hard drive space. And then you have to think about, okay, now what I want to do is I want to put a data lake in my setup so that inside of my data lake, certain tasks, LLMs, things are accessible. Outside, they are not. And so this really becomes important in the idea of securing your own materials and your own identity, because like Bob said, you're asking this thing to interview you. If you're talking to an online one, I have news for you. It's mapping your psyche.
Yeah, really good stuff. And I'm glad to get to this maybe at the end of the episode. For some people, they're like, hey, I'm a prompt, you know, expert and I understand these things, but you know, for some of us, we just need the how-to. So it was fun today to get into, you know, all the topics around AI and Bitcoin. That's kind of where we went with it. But it's also awesome to get into the nitty-gritty a little bit. And so thankful for each of you guys for coming up and sharing perspective, having the discussion. It's always fun. We do this every weekday, 10 a.m. Eastern, except for we won't be on Monday. Taking the day off. So chill out, go touch some grass, enjoy. And yeah, I want to wish you guys a great Friday. And don't forget to check out bitcoinveterans.org if you need help on your Bitcoin journey. And also, if you're looking to attend the conference, bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025. And always remember, whatever you do, do not shitcoin. I don't have anything new, guys, for the shitcoin thing today, so I just want to disappoint everybody with that.
So people that use fiat currency as a store of value, we call them poor. We call them poor. People that use fiat currency, we call them poor.